This week in the Famicom Dojo podcast, we talk about the history of video game rating systems and why no one cares anyway. Future retro is dominated by a nostalgic past, and I explain just why I didn't mention Wii Play games like Metroid Prime Trilogy in a previous episode. There, happy Nagojira.
Thinking the other day,
yeah,
which is dangerous.
Oh yeah, of course.
About how the Wii kind of like lost the kids market. I mean, the Wii U, you know.
The Wii kind of lost the entire market.
I mean, I'm not talking about really little kids. I mean, Nintendo still got that. They've still got the like the 6 to 10, but like, you know,
on 3DS.
But like, you know, the upper elementary school kids and like, you know, middle school kids have just completely moved over, you know, in America to the, you know, the 360, and in Japan to, like, I don't know, either staying on the 3DS and not bothering with a home console at all, or moved over to the PlayStation 3.
Sure.
And that surprised me for a long time, because you look at their software libraries, and there's really not anything that's, you know, geared towards kids. And then it's kind of struck me that games that are geared towards adults are geared towards kids.
Oh, for sure.
You know, Duke Nukem 3D was probably, I mean, not Duke Nukem 3D, Duke Nukem Forever would have been very enjoyable to me when I was 12.
Yeah, I think I was around 12 or 13 when I played Duke Nukem 3D for the first time.
Well, I guess that's pre-ESRB ratings, but I mean, that game was we were definitely not the one that it was supposed to be. And yet I see all these adults that I know playing Pokemon.
Yeah, the adults are the only people I know playing Pokemon.
Kids aren't playing it anymore. The kids think it's uncool. What the little kids want to do what the older kids are doing, and the older kids want to do what the high school kids are doing, you know.
So there's a problem with that though, right?
Well, the problem is they're not supposed to be playing those games.
Which makes me wonder how the heck this happens. Did I ever tell you my story of trying to buy Dragon Age?
Tell me.
So I wasn't sure I wanted it at first. My friend Najim encouraged me to pick it up. Told me about the different origins and stuff. And he knew I liked Mass Effect a lot. So I was like, fine.
I was like, what do you mean you didn't know if you wanted to buy it? Did you not know BioWare made it?
I knew I liked Mass Effect and wasn't going to say I like BioWare based on one game I played of theirs. So I grudgingly picked it up. I did wait for a sale, so I got it for like $40 from Target. And stop me if I told the story already, but so I go in and I pick up a copy and they have to ask me for my ID. And I'm like, really? I'm like 30 years old. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wait. Really?
Yes. It's like, I'm sorry. I have to scan it for the computer. I'm like,
she was flirting with you.
It was a guy. Well, maybe he was flirting with me. Let me continue.
Okay. Keep going.
So I'm like paying for the game, you know, and he's like, well, just to warn you, there's some gay stuff in this game. I'm like, yeah, I know. It's like, oh, you know, so if you don't mind, it's fine. It's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm aware of the controversies around these games. It's like, oh, okay.
That's why we need more content specific labels, because if I game and it's rated M, I don't know if there's gay stuff in it. I mean,
well, I mean, this is the kind of game where, like, you go into a fight, and there's, like, occasionally random encounters. You go into a fight, and when it's over, you're just covered in blood splatter. And you like, talk to your party members afterwards, and you're all covered in blood. And you just have this casual conversation, just drenched in the stuff. And I think it's more for the violence and like the melee combat than it is for necessarily the sexual content, but it's in there too.
Yeah. But that's the thing though. I'm actually very surprised that not just that since you were carded as a 30-year-old, but that you were carded at all, because man, it seems that these games are, that this rating system is not being enforced at all.
I don't know if that's entirely it. I think the real problem is that parents are buying these games for their kids and they're thinking, paradoxically perhaps, given the debate about violence in video games, it's like, oh, it's just a video game. How bad can it be?
Well, have they played a video game in the last, let's go 15 years here?
Anyone in our generation has, I think, no excuse to think this way.
No. Oh. But like these 7-year-olds playing Call of Duty and stuff, I mean, maybe not seven, but well, some of them might be. But I don't understand how their parents could do that, because their parents would be young enough probably at this point to have a video game rating system in place. Now, that's another interesting thing about the video game rating system. Is it a legal system? Because it's not a government institution, you know?
Right, yeah. It's an entirely voluntary program. And although I think the government got involved in the first place to help sort of install this voluntary system to allay concerns of parents who you know, because this was after like Columbine and stuff, right? Or was it before? Because
no one's going to enforce it, how am I going to ignore the system in the future and allow my kids to get away with it?
Well, I know that there were cases like in California, and I think maybe some other states, but California in specific, where some store owners would absolutely refuse to sell the game to minors. And I guess the final ruling on that was that it was a violation of their constitutional rights to be able to buy the game. And so they can't do that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a dad now, so I don't think minors should have rights.
they don't by and large, actually.
But I mean, like, isn't it kind of a theater can't technically keep under 13-year-olds from seeing a PG-13 movie is what I heard. But a lot of theaters will. They'll say, no, you can't go into that one. But interesting. But it's an advisory rating. It's not a government mandated rating. Clearly an adults only movie. Yeah. You know, because if you show that kind of stuff to a minor, you're breaking a whole different set of rules.
Right. Yeah. Even like the rated R thing is you're supposed to be accompanied by someone who is allowed to see that film, and they, you know, they're allowed to vouch for you. So you can go in when at any age, it's just not advised.
Yeah, it's different. So that's the thing with the whole games. I don't know what. I guess I don't know how I feel about this, because I definitely played games that were too violent for the age that I was playing them when I was young. I was kind of at the tail end of it. Like, the first game that I remember, I'm too young to play this game, because it actually had a rating, was Mortal Kombat 2 for the Super Nintendo.
Sure.
That was the first game that, it was in the midpoint. It was before Nintendo started using the ESRB ratings, but after they decided to relax their policies. It just had a big ugly warning on the box that wasn't an ESRB warning that said 17+.
Well, the original Mortal Kombat game on Super Nintendo had the blood removed from it.
Yep, which just looked weird, because they replaced it with, I don't know,
goo. Well, and even in the Genesis version, though, either it had like no blood or less blood, and you had to have a code to unlock it.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a code that everybody knew and everybody had, but yeah. But I don't think it did any damage to me. I think that's an entirely different debate right there of whether violence in video games or swearing or nudity or sex actually affects anybody.
Right.
But if we've are if people are discounted that that's not, you know, that that doesn't matter, then why do we have a rating system at all?
Well, you know, it was the 90s. Tipper Gore, you know, got decided that music wasn't needed to be regulated.
Oh, and music regulation is weird. It's an all or nothing system. It's like explicit lyrics or
right. Well, that was the compromise. Like they wanted a more graduated system originally, I think.
Yeah, it's like, you know, filthy or clean, you know, but it's
just
not
like our podcasts.
Yeah, but it's not really like that, though. I mean, I don't know. It's some genres are hit harder than others, but like you get a Ben Folds album, some of the sure. early, and they probably should have had that sticker on. Then it is on albums that have one or two bad words in what is otherwise, you know, a pretty clean album. It's very subjective and weird.
Or like, you know, was 1986 when the Transformers movie came out, and like, you know, they had Spike dropping an S bomb just so they can get the PG rating.
Never watched it.
Oh man, it's the most ridiculously forced line in the entire film. although I guess appropriate for the context, and you've got a giant planet eating planet bearing down on you. Spoilers. And then like the video game ratings, I barely even noticed when they got announced, really. Like I did start seeing them on boxes, but it did not affect me in any measurable way.
Oh no, not at all. So Sega was first.
Okay.
They did theirs first. And then the 3DO company came in, they were second. And both of these places had different rating systems. They were in-house, they were voluntary. Sega's was a little less voluntary because Night Trap was the game that started off this whole controversy in the first place.
Oh, so these are like pre-ESRB and Cero whatever.
Yeah, there was no rating system at all. And then Night Trap was released with no rating at all. And it caused an S-bomb storm.
Trying to keep our clean rating here, people.
We don't want the ESRB up our behinds on this one. I'm sure they have a lot of jurisdiction over our podcast.
Yeah, or over any podcast.
Any of you are listening from the ESRB right now, you have to tell me you're a cop. Okay, anyway. that game, which is... Have you played Night Trap?
No, I don't even think I've heard of it.
What?
If Cinder was here, she probably would know what you were talking about.
I mean, I didn't own a Sega CD at the time, and I wasn't even a Sega game player. But like, it was on the news all the time, which of course brought sales through the roof on that game.
Sure.
I mean, they banned it from the stores, but stores still had tons of unsold copies because it's not a very good game. I mean, they didn't sell a lot. That was the best advertising that game ever got. The history. Can I go a little bit into the history of Night Trap?
Oh, of course.
It was made in like 1984, a long time ago, like 84, 85, for a console that never actually took off.
1984 was 30 years ago. Okay, continue.
Anyway, you watch the video of it, and it's way 80s, despite being released in the 90s in America, or anywhere. But it was made for this system that was going to be made by, I used to know this off the top of my head. It was going to be basically another 8-bit system that was VCR-based, but it was going to use kind of like an 8-track system, where they would have video that could switch tracks.
What?
Yeah, it was going to use a combination of probably cartridge or maybe disc and VHS tapes to allow a full motion video in games.
Blowing my mind right now.
Yeah, it never got released. But the thing is, this game, this Night Trap, was made for that system. It was going to be one of the launch titles. And it never happened. And a couple other games were made as well. A Sewer Shark was made around the same time. And they just actually, Sewer Shark maybe was a different era. I'll have to look that up. But this system never proceeded because 84, kind of video game crash type time. Not a lot of new things were being pursued. Actually, I think the research was started before video game crash, but I think it was canceled like a ways post video game crash, maybe 86, 87. Really got to look this up. Sorry.
Well, that was probably around the same time that they were seriously discussing the CD systems. So,
but yeah, it was the system was the Hasbro Nemo, which would be on VHS tapes.
What? Okay.
And if you play Night Trap, you'll see that the game basically just involves switching video clips from. It's kind of a full motion video game, but it's kind of real time.
Okay.
In the game, you control all of these security cameras that are happening during a slumber party.
Oh, with boy!
Controls. And that
this is starting to sound bad and a little familiar, actually.
But like this, no, that's a pretty good premise right there. But it doesn't go that way. But you're controlling these cameras, and if you see something going on, like someone's going to be attacking one of these girls, like you can send in a SWAT team, but like you have a limited number, so you got to make sure something actually bad's happening, and you're always switching. So it would work very well on a VHS tape because it's happening in real time.
Oh, interesting.
Just switching between these things, and you have to make sure you catch all these events or people are going to die and endings will be different. And so it has some replayability, but anyway, it was never released on that. But when CD systems finally came, they're like, hey, you know what? We've got all this footage.
Right.
But anyway, so this game came out and it was pretty much ignored. I mean, people went, oh, that's interesting. It's a full motion video game with really grainy video. And an 80s soundtrack.
Okay, so that's really interesting, but what's the controversy about it then?
Controversy was that it looked like real people who were being violently killed. Now, there wasn't really much blood, but they kept showing this one scene where like this girl's being captured by these kind of like very scary looking guys, and they put some like device on her neck that looks like it's like sucking out her blood. Like it's to, I don't know, any death scene in any video game right now, it's pretty mild. It is a scene that would get garner a PG-13 at best, at most, in a movie theater. But at the time, games just didn't have that kind of content. And they were already riding the criticism of Mortal Kombat, whereas didn't look very realistic because the characters were very small.
Sure.
Was very violent, you know. And this game...
And cartoonishly violent on top of that, but yeah.
Yeah. But this game looked a little more realistically violent. And it was the one that they kept showing clips of to the juries when they were debating. Maybe not juries, Senate committee, the hearings. I'm not sure exactly.
Is that really any worse than what was shown on like primetime television?
Not really, but it's the fact that it was in a video game. I think that's the thing, because video games were still seen as a kid's medium. I'm going to liken it to Blockbuster Video's handling of anime. Okay.
Okay.
I got into anime when I was in junior high school, but I could only rent the ones that, that like Blockbuster had overlooked that they were supposed to be that they forgot to put the youth restricted viewing stickers on. Okay. Because very simple things, Tenchi Muyo, which would be a hard PG at best, had one of those stickers on. Ranma would be a PG-13. There was some nudity in there, but nothing. But like those stickers were usually reserved for movies like The Evil Dead and stuff, you know, like things that were really, really intense.
Right.
Porn, you know.
Right.
But it was these anime videos. Gosh, what was it? Some of them were just like ridiculous that they were featured on the videos. Like Gundam had these youth restricted video viewing stickers on. And you know, that's a lot of the early Gundam was a PG at most, you know. So if I wanted to rent these videos, if you work for Blockbuster Video, you have to tell me you're a cop.
No one works for Blockbuster Video anymore.
I used to peel the stickers off at the video store. They were the outer plastic. They peeled off really easy.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I used to move them over to Pauly Shore movies or Adam Sandler movies or Rob Schneider movies, because I felt that no kid should be watching those.
I guess with like the advent of things like Xbox Live and other communications with strangers over the internet, that this can take on a different dimension.
Definitely.
If you notice, you play games and you load it up and it'll even say that online gaming isn't rated.
Yeah.
And they can get away with that. And it's mostly because you have these like potty mouth morons. Yeah, just go ahead and try and play Halo. I dare you. So there was this whole thing. I got interviewed with some friends of mine back in Madison a few years ago. I was like 4 years ago, I want to say. They were doing a story. The local NBC affiliate was doing a story about how someone got into like a fight on Xbox Live, and the other person like showed up at their house, not knowing that the other person they're fighting with was underage. Like their mom answered the door, and yeah, it was just this whole thing. So of course it scared all the parents, right? It's like you know, video games are too real, kind of thing. And some of what I said did end up getting used, but I was trying to make a point about how the situation even arose in the first place, which was that, yeah, you know, we're adults who are online and we're gaming, but the real issue I have here is that the people who tend to be the worst offenders are like kids.
Yeah. They're the worst.
Yeah. I mean, not to say adults don't do this, because they absolutely do. But like, if there's a kid on there, you guaranteed he's going to just shoot his mouth off constantly. And the fact that this kid was, you know, playing a game that they probably shouldn't have been playing in the first place, given the rating, like, how did the situation even arise? Not to say that anyone deserves to have someone come to their house to beat them up or whatever. Not to say that they did anything to deserve it. At all.
Yeah, exactly. Because kids are kids. But at the same time, where exactly were the parents right there? Like, I have demonstrated on numerous occasions that I may not possibly be father of the year, as I use my daughter as a and on my Puzzles and Dragons characters and stuff like that. But I'm not going to buy games that are obviously not age appropriate, or if I am, I'm going to play them with her, you know, for online gaming. Not until she's old enough to know everything that's going on in a way that, no, maybe never. No, not until she's married. Okay.
So I'm not sure who these ratings are for. Like, you and me, we know better. So we're going to, you know, make sure that we see our kids away from the kinds of games or the online stuff, or not care, give them the tools they need and let them go. Right. Like, this isn't a concern for us. And it's not a concern for the people who like buy the games for their kids and be like, oh, how bad can it be? Right. Who the heck are they trying to warn at this point?
I think they're advertisements.
That's probably true.
I you know, that's the conclusion I've come to, that a lot of people dismiss games if they're not rated M.
Sure.
They go, it's not a hardcore game. But like Call of Duty, I don't consider a hardcore game. Do you know what I mean? It's gritty, it's violent.
Right.
But it's about the most casual game you can play, you know, because everybody plays it, you know, and it's not known for its extreme difficulty. I mean, you get in multiplayer modes, you can definitely, I mean, but the same could be said for Smash Brothers. Smash Brothers is a cutesy platformer, you know, character mashup game.
Mm.
Some of the most hardcore gamers out there are people who like play it, you know, in leagues and stuff.
But you know, even then, it's not considered like a top tier fighting game.
No, well, we're going to get complaints on that one.
Oh, some go people, ahead, bring it on.
So there's a campaign right now for Nintendo to release a wired controller for the Wii U, just because these people who are, you know,
for the input lag,
no players, input lag, and also Bluetooth interference.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, and there's enough people who take it seriously enough that this is a thing, you know? So,
I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not my scene, but I mean, it does exist out there. But that game, yeah, definitely. So we had these ratings. So Sega made theirs, which it was like GA, general audiences, MA-13, MA-17. And I think that's as high as they went. And then 3DO had their system, E for everyone. Then they had, I think, 12, 15, 17, and AO. And 3DO actually was the only console manufacturer who had adult-only games.
Okay.
Their system. And despite what everyone thinks, no, Plumbers Don't Wear Ties was not an adults-only game. It was rated it was rated 7. But it should have been rated, don't play this at all, ever, because it's terrible.
That's definitely a whole other topic. Well, that's interesting, because it seems like the 3DO rating system is like the most like the ESRB.
It's pretty close. Japan had the old Sega Saturn rating system.
Okay.
And which didn't transfer over to the Dreamcast, and it was green label games. Actually, some of the original titles were kind of a blue green, kind of blue label, which is for everyone. Yellow label, which was more like a soft R, I suppose. And red label, which was like either a hard R or like an adults only. So that one went from nothing to everything, you know.
Right.
It was for everybody or only for adults, you know. It was very and then that got replaced by CERO rating system, CERO, the Computer Entertainment Rating Organization, I believe that's what it stands for. System, which originally, which has gone through a few different changes, but right now is basically A, B, C, D, and Z.
Yeah, I remember the last time we were at Tokyo Game Show, like the CERO Z games, you couldn't even see them unless you went into a booth.
Yep.
They're
kept in a separate section that miners, you know, you have to be, you have, you know, they're at some stores, they're even lock and key.
So like Lollipop Chainsaw was a CERO Z game, I believe, right?
Some of them get re-released in two different versions, a CERO Z uncensored version and a, like, No More Heroes had both a CERO D and a CERO Z release.
Really?
A lot of games are CERO Z. Assassin's Creed is CERO Z.
Wow. Yeah, like other countries are a lot more restrictive on their violence content.
Yep. But like there's like games that have nudity in them that are C, you know.
Right, yeah, because they have different attitudes towards sex as well.
Yeah. So I mean, it's kind of a strange little system there, but yeah, a lot of Western games, pretty much like all these AAA titles. I mean, the CERO Z section for next gen is filling up like crazy.
Really?
Wii U, I think, was a CERO D. But I think it was...
What was?
Zombie U.
Oh, Zombie U.
But I think it might have been somewhat censored. Japanese companies make the decision of whether to cut content from the American releases or release them as CERO Z titles. But a lot of the things that are rated M in America are very highly restricted in Japan. It's very interesting. Because it used to be the other way. Back in the days of SNK home cartridge games, you know, it was very famous that they took the blood out of Samurai Showdown and took the bounce out of Mai's bosoms for the American releases, because you know kids are going to be affected by those $250 cartridges. It's really weird because I don't know, it was this like Puritan idea of for the American gamers, and that they didn't do that in Japan. But now Japan's kind of switched around, and now Americans didn't get away with whatever they wanted video games, and Japan's really kind of changing things around.
Well, you know, if like what you're saying about video games ratings in the U.S. being kind of advertisements for how awesome they are, it's kind of funny to me, like the movie industry has gone kind of the opposite way, where they try to make everything PG-13. And have been sort of like bending what that really means, so that, like, I think Total Recall, the new one, is PG-13.
PG-13?
Something like that.
Die Hard wasn't, but it was still pretty good.
Yeah, but, like, you know, there were these, like, rated R movies that, you know, I shouldn't have seen the original Total Recall when I was, like, 11 or 12, or Terminator 2, right? Yeah. But, like, those the sequels for those movies are not R-rated films.
No, they aren't. It's very, very strange and somewhat subjective. Like, yeah, there's R-rated movies that that my parents would rent, and they'd watch it. They said, you know, Kevin, this was a really good movie. Let's watch it. For example, I watched Braveheart when I was 13.
Okay.
My parents were like, you know, it's kind of violent, but, you know, this is a really good movie. You should watch this. You know, we really enjoyed it. You know, and probably even earlier than that, that definitely wasn't my first R-rated movie. But at the same time, there were some that, like, you know, even when I was like 16, my parents were like, nah, you shouldn't watch this one.
Yeah, my parents were super inconsistent about that, because I distinctly remember, like, you know, my dad was quite happy to let me see Terminator 2, right? But, like, didn't want me to see Batman Returns.
Okay, that's weird.
That is weird. or Doom was just fine, but Mortal Kombat, mm-mm.
And then we have the modern rating system, and it started, what, KA was the first rating? Then, was there a teen rating when it first started?
I don't remember.
Because it's gone through a couple different revisions.
Yeah, I forgot about the KA rating, actually, because I thought that E was the lowest, but I guess not.
It used to be KA, because it said it was kids to adults, because they didn't want to make it seem like it was just for kids.
Oh, did KA become E then?
It became E.
Okay. And
there's what, E10?
Something like that. Yeah, that's definitely a newer one.
Yeah, E10. But you know what? You never see E. If you're not Nintendo, you don't even see E or E10 games anymore. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, pretty much. Again, like you were saying, it's more of an advertisement.
And even teen games have really kind of gone away. Teen seems to be like the rating that a JRPG is shooting for these days.
Sure, sure.
Is the rating for anything with guns.
So, like, gorgeous, and somewhat violent, and vapid.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Even racing games are, like, going for teen, because they've got to have, like, the swears, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, it's just like how the G rating has disappeared.
Oh, yeah, there aren't any rated G films anymore.
Even Disney films are not rated G anymore. Like, Wreck-It Ralph was PG, for example.
The first Star Trek film was rated G.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Star Trek. Sorry, I was thinking Star Wars. Yeah.
No.
First Planet of the Apes was rated G, even though it featured, like, swearing and Charlton Heston's butt.
I don't understand this at all. It's almost as if it's totally arbitrary.
Almost. Well, and you know, PG used to cover a wide scope of things. You know, you had to be for an R rating. But then when PG-13 came in, PG became the new G.
Yep.
Because, you know, PG films used to have all kinds of stuff in them, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Before PG-13 happened, you know?
Was Weekend at Bernie's PG?
Sequel was. The first one was PG-13, one of the early PG-13 movies, yeah. But, yeah, it's very arbitrary. It is. It's an advertisement. You know, if no one wants to release a PG movie, an action movie at PG, so they'll put in some stuff to get it up to PG-13.
Okay.
You know, and nobody wants to release an E or E10 related game unless they're Nintendo.
Yeah.
No kid wants to buy an E rated. I don't know. Now that I have kids of my own, I the rating system I still think isn't made for me, though, because I think a game has to be judged on what type of game it is and what kind of content and what kind of, you know,
right.
decisions are being made in that. So I'm not really going to use that. I'm going to be a parent who actually, like, sits down and goes, okay, this is appropriate, this isn't appropriate. But man, I used to when I went back to America, the short time I was there, I was hanging out at the game stores a lot because, you know, I hadn't for a while. And just this constant swarm of, you know, kids buying these incredibly inappropriate games or getting their parents to buy them for them. Will Grand Theft Auto make Little Billy a homicidal killer? Probably not. But if Billy was already predestined to have some of those tendencies, or he comes from a family where the parents don't care enough to actually look at the rating on a game, maybe. I think those things go hand in hand, though. You know what I mean? Like right. A responsible parent buying an M-rated game that they're going to play with their kids? I don't see any problem with that whatsoever. But a parent buying an M-rated game for their already misbehaving kids to shut them up...
Oh, yeah, using it as a babysitter? Yeah, that's not the game's fault at all.
So I think that's a topic for other discussion, but has the game rating system ever prevented you from playing a game you wanted to play?
In my case, no, mostly because of my age. I was already came in almost an adult by the time it was really instituted.
20s or something. How about you? We'd love to hear your comments. So let us know.
So Future Retro, what was yours rated? Do you even remember? Or was it rated at all?
Why don't you start?
I chose Adventure Time. Hey, I just can't watch Steal Our Garbage, which is a 3DS release. I'm pretty sure it's rated E.
Is that a reference from the movie The Stupids?
I don't know.
The main plot point there was that they were trying to find out who was stealing their garbage.
The plot is that the Ice King stole all their garbage and made a garbage princess out of it, that they had to save.
Wow.
I mean, that's not really so much the plot. I mean, you know, as much of a plot as a game like this really, really has. But I like it more because it's a huge throwback to Zelda 2.
Really?
Oh yeah, it has like the overworld map, and the even like the enemies that pop up are very reminiscent of the NES version of the outlines you'd see in the overworld there. The side scrolling platforming action was a lot like Zelda 2, although you have both Finn and Jake, and they get these increasingly interesting abilities as it goes on, and the controls aren't as bad, and you don't have to like launch your body at enemies necessarily to defeat them, but there is a down thrust, so take that as you will. But it's really silly. There's like a fully like, you know, recorded game intro music, and as well as I think the intro also is fully voiced, but then like the rest of it is just all text. But yeah. It's really pretty, and it's only like $20 if you can find it, the physical version anywhere. You can definitely download it from the eShop.
And that's a 3DS.
3DS, yeah. I think the second game, which I have not played and is a different style, is on both Wii U and 3DS. But I don't know if WayForward did that one. They definitely did the first one, though.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I need to get an American 3DS at some point. Listeners, how would you like to give Vink a birthday present? It's Vink's birthday next week, and by the time this podcast comes out, you've already missed it. But if anybody has a, you know, they're cleaning up their house and they're like, "Wow, there's a 3DS. I never used that. I should probably throw it out on the street." Wait, I could give.
Totally. That's the thing that happens. Yeah. Yeah. All right. What's your future retro?
My future retro is a classic that people in the know why it's a classic, but sure. It's Panzer Dragoon. And you're familiar with this title?
Yeah. I know it's one I needed to have played and I never gotten around to it.
And it's getting increasingly hard to play it because the value just keeps going up and up and up. I got into Saturn when the Saturn was on its last legs. I think probably the last titles had been released already before I even bought my Saturn. I got into it in 1998, or maybe early 99. So all these titles were out, and that was one of the titles that people were telling me, you need to get that, you need to get that. And already on eBay, it was going for like $80, which seemed a lot of money to pay for a Saturn game at the time. But I bought a copy, and it's just amazing. It's a dragon riding semi-real-time battle system JRPG.
Okay.
Really good. The FMV doesn't hold up very well today, but the battle system, I think, is what really, really sells it. And the ability to like morph and transform your dragon pretty much on the fly to go from different like battle types and defense types and things like that. Absolutely an amazing title. Good story. Although, as I said, the FMVs are looking a little dated, and the cutscenes that use the game engine look really bad these days.
Oh, but no.
That's the thing. The story is interesting enough, and the combat and stuff is interesting enough that I think people could get away with, even if they never played it back in the day, I think it could be future retro because I think it holds up strong enough. But man, if there's one game that really, really needs a remake, Panzer right. Dragoon, they wouldn't even have to do a lot. If they could even just bring it up to like PlayStation 2 levels or even Dreamcast levels, it would be enough. Because the art style it's supposed to be kind of desolate and squalid because it's post-apocalyptic. So it doesn't need bloom lighting and, you know, all kinds of stuff, but it does need to be a little smoother.
Well, Orta came out, and that was for like PS2 or something, right? Or was that PS3?
Yeah, Xbox.
Oh, Xbox. Original Xbox?
Original Xbox, yeah.
Okay.
And it's like Crimson Dragon is a sort of like spiritual sequel that's on Xbox One. A lot of the same did that, but those are back to being the rail shooters that the Panzer Dragoon series was. Panzer Dragoon Saga in Japan was called Orta Panzer Dragoon RPG because it is a game. And the sad part is the team who made it, Team Andromeda, has disbanded since then. Although some of the members went on to Smilebit, which did Panzer Dragoon Orta. Orta Panzer Dragoon RPG. It should be Azel? Yeah. Never mind.
Cool story, bro. I'm
getting excited here. But unfortunately, the original source code for the game has been lost.
Oh, wow.
Lost to time. I don't know when Sega was being shaken up or something. So at most, it could be emulated, but they can't really port it to anything without doing like a full remake.
Okay. Bummer.
Which is really sad because it had a very, very limited print run. There's less than 100,000 copies out there. Far less. It depends who you ask. Some people say the first print run was around 6,000 and then 12,000 print runs after that. But no one has a really credible source for this. So it's safe to say well under 100,000, but possibly as low as like 50,000 copies.
Wow.
Which is terribly, terribly sad to me because I'm a collector and I have a copy of the game, so I'm good. I'm set. But it's a game that more people should be able to play. And since Sega Saturn emulation is terrible and since it can't really be easily virtual console to something, I think a lot of people are just going to wind up not being able to play it, and that's a shame.
Oh, speaking of shames, what's in your pile of shame?
My pile of shame. Gosh, everything is in my pile of shame. I think what I'm going to go with this is one that's recently come to me. It is in my Neo Geo pocket of shame right now.
Okay.
People who know me know that I absolutely adore the Neo Geo Pocket, even though it only survived for like a year and a half in America. And I have all of the common titles and most of the rares now in my possession.
Wow.
And one of the games that I was looking forward to when the system was still a game called Fazele. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It was made by the Sacnoth company, which did a Kudelka and the Shadow Hearts series. And it's a kind of a futuristic-ish RPG game, which was a very late game before SNK was bought out by the Aruz company, which just turned it into a pachinko platform.
Yeah.
But the game got reviewed, and review copies were sent out to critics and stuff, and it was getting very good reviews because it is a very good game. But then SNK America died before it actually got released. So it never made it into the market. But the European version got out there before they folded. And what it made that game was amazingly valuable right away. There were copies going for about $200 of this little cart. And then the value completely dropped because as SNK was liquidating all their stuff, a third party basically bought up all the carts and was releasing these things at stores or whatever. It was like a Neo Geo Pocket and six games for $60.
Oh, jeez.
Like, no case or manuals or anything. Just in a blister pack, a system and six carts. But what happened is it made this game a lot more common. And so the price went down. You could probably get one today for $30 or $40.
Okay.
I got mine for $20 at the time. But the thing is, I was so excited about this game when I couldn't get it that when I finally got it, I still haven't beat it. It's in my Neo Geo Pocket right now because I love my Neo Geo Pocket and I'll play games for it, but like I never reach for the RPG because I just don't have the time. Right. Now I've decided that I'm not going to play any other game on my Neo Geo Pocket until I beat Fazele. So it's been pretty much locked in the cartridge slot of that system for about 3 years now.
Oh, jeez. You just reminded me that I still have Minish Cap in my pocket, in my Game Boy Advance SP, unplayed since we last talked about it.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry.
It's not for lack of wanting to play it. I know I'd enjoy the game. I know I'd enjoy the experience, but it's just gotten to a place where it's hard to go to a game that you know is going to be 20, 30, 40, 50 hours, you know?
Right.
And there's always so many new things coming out as well. You know, when I got the Wii U, I kind of stopped retroing for a while, you know.
Right.
You got a shameful game this month?
It's a couple. They're related. They're part of a series. Metroid Prime 2 and 3.
Really? I thought you were big into Metroid Prime.
Well, I am. I'm a little too big into it, which is why I haven't played them, if that makes any sense at all, and I'm sure it doesn't.
Nope. Tell me more.
Okay. With the Metroid game, I am always feel under extreme pressure to 100% it the first time, which is ridiculous because I never do it. I'm never able to. So I finished Prime after like trying to backtrack and get everything. I was like, screw it. I'm just going to go to the end and beat it. And I'm glad I did because it was a fun game. And I bought 2 and 3 when they first came out. So 3 was what? August 2007. Oh God, that's almost 7 years ago. Wow, that's a shocking revelation right there. Anyway, so I got 3 and I opened it up and I played like the first intro level. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna put this down. I'm gonna go back and play 2, and I'm gonna finish that, and then I'm gonna play 3, and it'll be fine. But I obviously didn't do that, mostly because of the Xbox 360 onslaught that happened later that fall. But I did try and go back and play 2 on my GameCube. Even though I had the Wii, you know, I like playing all the stuff on the GameCube. And I even like would bring it with me when I go visit people. Like I visited my sister in Chicago and I brought it with me to play. And I don't know. I didn't like it as much as the first game. So that was part of the problem. But I would like make these meticulous notes about power-ups that I couldn't get. And it just got really tiresome when I stopped playing the game. So then I never got back to 3 either. I still feel like I can't play 3 until I play 2.
I would like to... I don't know. That's a game that's very, very hard to get these days.
Is it?
Because Metroid Prime Trilogy was a limited release. And then, you know, I suppose getting the first 2 GameCube games would be pretty easy now. But I guess the third one's the one that's going up in value.
Okay.
Because Nintendo stopped printing it, so.
Yeah, and I opened it up right away, so I guess I could get some money for it now. But no, I really do want to play them both someday, but I just don't know when.
Yeah. Well, I had a positive thought.
Sure.
Very negative situation, that I would be able to play all these games when eventually companies decided to stop making any game that appeals to me whatsoever. And we were getting very close. Because I was looking at him like first person shooter, sports game, licensed sports game, first person shooter. All right, I don't like video games anymore. I'm like, yay, I can finally the video game, it's the end of the line for video games right here. And now I can just go back and play the best of what was there, because from now on I shan't buy a new video game because they're all terrible.
I'm so sorry that the Wii U exists and I helped enable you to own games for it.
Then I started buying new games again for the Wii U and then Kickstarter.
Right, right.
Thanks a lot, Kickstarter. Mobile games were going all, you know, free to play to win, you know. So yeah. I was like, I was into iPhone games hardcore for a couple of years. Because there were some really good titles, and you paid $2 for them, and they were yours forever. But
you were in Infinity Blade, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still haven't played it.
It's cool, but I don't know. I played 1 and 2. I liked 1 more than 2, despite 2 being a much better game, just because it's too similar to 1. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you start the series, you could probably just
start with 2. Yeah.
But But I kind of got out of that, and I'm like, okay, this is fine. This is the time where I go retro only. And no.
Well, I'm glad, and I'm sure that the listeners are glad too.
What do you mean? I mean, we're a retro based thing. And I could have become one of those angry video game players. You know what I mean? I could have just picked up whatever was new and I could have like put it on and I could have yelled at it for a while and, I don't know, paid off my college loans, you know? But now there's all these games that I actually want to play, and it's caused me to remain positive about the future of the video game industry. And I'm never going to get through Fazele.
Well, if you're angry about there being good games released that you actually want to play, why don't you leave us a comment? You can do it at Twitter or on Facebook or on our podcast show notes at famicomdojo.tv/podcast. Leave a comment. Oh, yeah, you can call us at 608-492-1923 and leave us a message. We're also on iTunes, the free storefront there, and you can leave a comment or rate us, please, please, please. Every little bit helps. And Stitcher. We're on Stitcher too.
You can mail me unused American 3DS systems.
We'll include the address in the show notes. Probably not.
No, I'm joking about this, but I made a similar comment and somehow wound up with a PSP.
Right. So... Okay. Yeah. There you go. So let's put that out there and see what happens.
Nothing will happen. Okay.
Okay, until next time, the dojo is...
The dojo is waiting desperately for a time when video games are no longer fun, so I can go back and play the ones that I've missed in the past. Help, EA. You are my only hope. Right.
Tom Dojo.